Hey everybody, what's up? This is Joseph Coyne and welcome to the ASCA Podcast. Hey guys, welcome back. I'm your host, Joseph Coyne. This is episode 43. So to start, we've got to talk Valve Performance. They help us get this podcast to you all. They make the Nord board, the Force Frame, which is the new incarnation of the groin bar, Human Track, and Force Sticks. I mentioned in the past that I get to use Force Sticks every day on my current role. I'm really lucky. Can't recommend them highly enough. I actually used to work in track and field with sprinters and jumpers, and I wish I had Force Sticks available to me then. They are super user-friendly. They give you something you can action immediately. Valve's motto is all about right information, right decision at the right time. So look, if you're in the market, please reach out to them. And look, not just for pro sport either, they're close to 40 private performance centers, old clients of Valve's, but it's really appropriate actually considering the nature of this podcast, roundtable of working in semi-pro and academic environment. So look, even if I've perked your interest a little, check them out. Valveperformance.com is the website, at Valveperformance Twitter, or shoot them an email, info at Valveperformance. Today, we have the third part of the 2019 roundtable. Now, if you remember, this roundtable is all about working in those semi-pro high school university settings, and it's the essence of what actually works out there in the real world when you don't have heaps of resources like you might have in pro sport. So we've got three guests. Nicola Morris, she's currently with High Performance Sport New Zealand, working with the rowing team, formerly Sydney University. She just moved over there to the Kiwis. Kurt Vogel, who's a private consultant for athletes and also works with the University of Southern Queensland. And Sam Joseph is at St. Edmunds in Ipswich, and he works with QUT Wildcats Netball as well. Now, all of these three are experts in working in these environments. In the first podcast, we talked strength and power. The second, we talked energy systems. Now we're talking prehab, rehab. What has worked for them? How they integrate with things like other service providers, like physiotherapists, and for a semi-pro academic athlete. Even sometimes you don't even have these things available. So what do you do in those situations too? So let's hear what they all have to say. Let's go to the next topic, and we're going to talk prehab or rehab for the S&C coach. And obviously, sometimes this is a physio's domain. Sometimes you're the S&C coach. But say you're at a high school or you're in the semi-pro environment, you've got to take care of a lot of this prehabilitation type work and factor that into your programs. How do we go about that? What do we use? Have we dealt with anything like a return to play? And where do we sit in this sort of environment that you've worked in the past? And Nicola, please enlighten us on this sort of prehab-rehab topic for a S&C coach.
Yeah, I've been really lucky in terms of the rehabilitation. We had a really good setup with Sydney University in most of our sports where we dealt really closely with the physios. So anytime there was an injury, there was constant communication between the S&C and the physio and working the best way to return. So it was a really good collaboration rather than being in that siloed effect. However, yeah, when there is no physio working with the entire team, maybe in the individual sports, it can be a bit difficult trying to get that communication back and forth to make sure that everyone's across the same page and we're all working to the best results of the athlete.
Interesting. What would be the number one thing you've learned from the physios in regards to practicing, or in regards to strength and conditioning, and what you need to do with an athlete who might be under an injury cloud or might be coming back from an injury?
Most I've learned from the physio. That's tough. I'm not sure if this is directly learned from the physio, but personally, what I've learned in the rehabilitation side is really, really talk to the athlete. Constantly communicating on how they're feeling and what they're going through can give some really good early signs to see if they're not actually healing or they're doing a really good job and they're a little further ahead rather than conventional, just the guidelines.
Yeah, interesting. And so what would be the main injury you would have had to work with a physio on in your time with Sydney University? Was there some common ones? Was it like some knee stuff? Was it majority knees, or was it majority ankles or lower backs? What would be the main one? Or even if you didn't have main ones, what would have been the most interesting one for you?
yeah, we had kind of themes often through the seasons of different sports. We had athletics. We always had some stressies were the ones to watch out for. We had quite a few of them on and off throughout the seasons. Any runner I know who hasn't had a stress fracture is going really well. And then on the flip side of that, you get all the swimmers end up having had shoulder issues. So trying to best negate that and develop their strength through range as best possible. But the coolest one I've seen wasn't actually, was a past athlete of mine. I wasn't currently working with them, but one of our players ended up doing a try-saving tackle and the corner post in rugby flicked up and sliced his leg and ended up with over 100 stitches. And then the next day was having some redness and some problems, and his mum was a nurse and rushed him to hospital and ended up with necrotizing fasciitis. So yeah, flesh-eating bacteria disease. And but the player amazingly ended up coming back for the end of the season and winning the grand final. So pretty good end to the story.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I wouldn't want anything like that. I've had a fair few stitches in my time. I definitely wouldn't want anything like that going on. What's the main thing you've done? I'm going to come back to these stress fractures, and I know a lot of it's just rest and get the athlete to drop training load, something like that. But what's the main thing you would have done with the stress fractures with the runners?
Do you want to try and avoid them, or when they have the stress fractures?
Yeah, once they've got the stress fracture, then how do you bring them back stronger, hopefully, than they were before?
Yeah, so main thing would be trying to get them back in the gym as soon as possible so we can train around it. So it may be one foot that they're not able to use, but we're still able to work on the other side and non-weight bearing on that leg and the rest of their body as well. And then slowly reintegrating them into weight bearing. And then once we've got the all clear, trying to build them back into foot strengthening. So we did a lot of work on intrinsic foot strengthening and bare foot work, as well as skipping, and low-level plyometrics were a big staple of the program, which seemed to be really beneficial for our athletes. And then, yeah, just being really careful around if they are feeling tight and sore in that in those areas that are common for athletics, and just trying to get them to a physio or to anyone as soon as possible, so we can avoid getting a full-blown stressy. Try and avoid the symptoms as early as possible.
Yeah, some good points there, and they play some really good points, especially on that sort of crossover effect when you're training the uninjured limb. I think strength and conditioning coaches have a massive role to play with a injured athlete in that sort of just after the acute phase, getting people as strong as possible in that uninjured limb if they can't use the injured limb, and that's of such a benefit to them when they're coming back. Some really good.
Absolutely. Yeah, you want to make sure that when they're coming back better rather than weaker and less fit than before.
Sure. Sam, what about yourself? What's sort of been the rehabilitation or pre-rehabilitation philosophy you have, or the processes that you've gone through?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's a lot enterprising in that. I think I found with a good warm-up goes a long way, I think, in terms of your prehab type stuff. I think particularly with the kids that I've worked with, you can cover a lot more, like landing, shoulder mobility, hip mobility, how to jump properly. Even though they're not massive exposures, it's still a certain exposure to a certain movement, and that might save you having to spend 10-15 minutes on it later on. I found personally the knee program by Netball Australia has been really good with the netball team that I work with. I mean, it covers most of what you want. It's got everything, you know, forward, back, acceleration, decels, landing on two, landing on one, you know, all those types of things that we hear are the risk factors that if you can't do properly, you're going to hurt yourself type thing. So I think if you can get your warm up right, and understanding where your athletes may be deficient or maybe slightly at chance of a high risk of injury. You can probably not stop a lot, but you can go a long way to helping stop a lot. In terms of rehab at the school, sometimes what I find mostly, it's rarely that I'll get a kid coming in that's been in the program for a while and has done a lot of S&C work. Of course, it happens things like rugby where you do get those contact injuries. Often I'll get a lot of emails from a parent saying, my son has this injury, can we help? And it's more often just been a doctor said, oh yeah, do some squats or something like that. Or sometimes it's a physio said you need to have a strength and conditioning program. So more or less it's just you've got no background information. So for me, I think you can do worse than just going, all right, let's just start from the ground up here. You know, what can we do? What's hurting? What doesn't hurt it kind of thing, and figuring out, all right, we're deficient here. Maybe it's a hamstring tear. Okay. Can we do a bodyweight RDL? The answer is no. Okay. Well, that's where we're at right now. Let's build up from here. What can we do? What do we need to do to get forward? And just kind of going for, all right, let's treat it like we're at ground zero. Let's work on other stuff that we can, and let's try and rehab from there. And more or less with that, I think it's worked pretty well. Of course, you get some car crash type stuff. I've seen some pretty gruesome ones, especially at school age, which is kind of worrisome. But I think particularly at the younger age, the body has a really, really good power to heal if you give it time and if you give it the right things. You can get a lot of people back to some pretty dark spots. So I think you're just taking it slow, know what you want to achieve, know what your athlete tries to achieve, and just go from there more or less.
Interesting. The Netball Australia knee program, well, I'll have to check it out. I haven't seen it before, and I'll have to have a look at that one.
Yeah, it's really good. I think Lee Smith had a lot to do with it, with the Netball Australia physios had a lot to do with it as well. And it's more or less based around the ideals of the FIFA 11 plus, but I think it's pretty well, and the way it's been accepted in the netball community, particularly down at the grassroots level, is quite profound, particularly with, you know, the dirty word in netball was ACL. And everyone gets really scared by it. But I think that program has gone a long way. And I think the research is starting to confirm that as well, that it's helped prevent a lot of injuries. And, you know, if people are playing sport for longer, performing for longer, that's the whole point of our jobs, isn't it?
100%. And so that brings me to another question. If the ACL is the real big thing in netball, you've got this knee program, what would be your go-to as a strength and conditioning coach? What would you say, this is in my program that's actually helping reduce the chances of somebody getting an ACL tear when they're out on the court?
Yeah, I think they're pretty obvious ones in terms of if you've read a bit of research and seen a few ACLs. I think the hamstring strength is really, really important, knowing how to land properly. And just general lower body strength, I think, goes a long way to being able to help prevent that. Of course, you do get those ones where you just kind of go, well, what happened there, when you review it and go, did we push her too hard? Did we, you know, what happened there? Was she not prepared enough? I think now a lot of S&Cs have kind of gone, all right, we know what we need to do here to help, and physios for that matter as well. We know what we need to do to help reduce the risk factors. But I think, you know, being generally strong in the lower body, my programs try to reflect that. But again, with preference to hamstring strength, particularly eccentric strength, and single leg loading, so like your Bulgarians, split squats, and being able to land whilst being pushed from an uneasy position possibly, or unfamiliar position. Of course, when you've got the strength to do so, I think you don't just want to rush straight into, all right, push me as hard as you can, land on my right foot type thing. Gradually progressing through, okay, this is how we land on one. This is how we jump and land on one, and going, all right, now push me. Well, I've got a reasonable level of strength on my right leg. Now push me here while I'm in the air and land from there. And just, again, what Kurt said with his speed, increasing that volume, not to be the point of overbearing, but they've got a fair bit of exposure to it. So hopefully, if they do get exposed to it in a match or training or wherever it is, that they've got the strength and resilience to be able to come back, so for that joint to not go to that point of breaking. I mean, if that means it's rather than a grade three, it's a grade two, that's still probably a positive outcome. They haven't got the full rupture, but you're obviously trying to avoid it. But if that can be the difference, that's more or less what I go for. I'm trying to program to prevent those ACL injuries.
Yeah, some good points there. Some really nice remarks, definitely. Kurt, what about yourself? Rehab, prehab.
I'm a big fan of, similar to what Sam said, is warm-up goes a long way, a good warm-up. So I integrate a lot of exercises in my warm-ups, including D-cells and landing a lot, but also basic movement patterns and motor patterns. So I think that goes a long way, and I do a lot of that for prehab. Depending on the sport is also depending on what kind of time I have to give athletes prehab exercises. So like the rugby league, I don't have time to give them those kind of exercises. However, if they have a pre-existing injury, I'll have a chat to them and I give them exercises outside of training that they it's optional for them to do depending on how well they want to look after themselves. At times, depending on the group of athletes that I'm with, sometimes I have a physio there, sometimes I don't. Sometimes athletes can't afford to go to the physio. So you kind of do your best to deal with situations like that as well. So when it comes to rehab, I'm a big proponent of movement pattern correction makes the biggest difference. And obviously, we understand all the other components like strength as well, but once I correct the movement pattern around a joint or a specific movement, then I find the rest kind of falls into place a little bit.
Yeah, cool. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Nicola. What's been the number one thing you've learned from working alongside a physiotherapist, and then how have you applied that to what you do?
It is actually a really good question. I guess in regards to working with a physio, you know, I actually think the one best thing I learned from physio is actually high rep works makes a huge difference. So the endurance capacity rather than strength capacity for tendons makes a huge difference in rehabilitation. And a lot of people have different philosophies on this, but I find it works so well. Isometric and rep-based isolation work makes a huge difference to rehabilitation at tendons specifically and around the joint. Like say ankles, as an example, although this is a very broad generalization, nearly all ankle injuries can be fixed with calf raises. So obviously there's other exercises along the way, but slow controlled calf raises, single leg, can fix nearly all the calf injuries. Ankle injuries, as generalized as that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. The high rep work is something that we all get enamored as a strength conditioning professional with doing the heavy stuff, the 1 to 5 reps, that type of thing. And it is really common practice in physiotherapy to have those sort of programs of 3 sets of 15 to 25 or 3 sets of 50. You know what I mean? Even with body weight type, I'll go back to an Achilles type test, sort of just calf pump, sitting on the ground, pumping your calf back and forth with no weight, no load. Things like that are really commonplace. So I reckon that's a really valid point you said there, Kurt. I want to talk next about do we use anything or do we use any specific methods for rehabilitation? Are we using anything like blood flow restriction? We spoke about doing the crossover or keeping in mind about the crossover or transfer of the uninjured limb to the injured limb. Are we doing anything with I've heard of people doing EMS, electrical muscle stimulation on limbs while they're doing strength training. Are we doing anything like that in regards to prehab or rehab? And I'll start with you, Nicola.
Yeah, so I've done a lot of work in particular for rehab guys with blood flow restriction. I found it incredibly beneficial, especially with your knee injuries and that, trying to gain that muscle mass back, or if they've just come out of surgery, keeping that muscle mass. We had one girl who, one of my rugby girls, she had done her ACL playing rugby league in contact, and she was back in the gym after her surgery within a week, which in a semi-pro environment was pretty exciting. Most of them disappear for a bit. We got her on blood flow restriction and crossover transfer work. And, yeah, she was killing it. She didn't lose any muscle mass. She had the same girths on both legs at 10 weeks, which was pretty insane. But yeah, I really love the blood flow restriction stuff. I think it's fantastic.
So tell us how you use it. What would you do with the blood flow restriction? Like 5 sets, 3 sets, 20 reps, 10 reps, where would it go? That sort of thing.
So I've played around a little bit. I do a lot of talking with Chris Givigillo, the QAS, being such a leader in blood flow restriction and his playing around. But I find simple is quite easy at that stage of the rehab. And I usually go with 4 sets of 15. That's getting high enough reps for them to make a difference and doesn't take stupidly long, so they can do it at the end of their program. So if they're trying to join in with the rest of the squad, they don't feel like they're on a completely different program and they can kind of finish at the same time, which is really good.
Yeah, cool. And then what sort of load are they using? Are they using a really light load? Are they using body weight? How do you figure that out? And what exercise are they doing? Squats? Are they doing like knee extensions? What do you think there?
Again, quite variable in terms of whatever the injury is and who it is. Often we don't have a leg press in the gym at Sydney Uni, but a leg extension. But we rigged one up with bands, so that's commonly one we use. That and leg press, single leg press, is often the two. That and single leg squat, are the three that I commonly use with my knee rehab girls and guys. And usually, if they've just come out of surgery, it can be as simple as putting it on passively to start off with, and then moving to walking and also strength training with it on. And yeah, usually once they're able to, if it's at the start, some of them are only able to do blood flow restriction with body weight. But yeah, we build up to about 30%.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Look, banded knee extensions, just as an aside, lucky enough to work with Chinese weightlifting for around 18 months, and they used to love the banded knee extension. and again, Kurt brought up like the high reps as well. They'll be doing sort of sets of 30 to 50 reps with these banded knee extensions, with a coach standing underneath a jerk block, holding this band behind the athlete, and I was going ripping him out for a good 30 or 50 reps. It was great stuff, good value.
Oh, rough.
There was some pain faces, definitely. Sam, mate, are we doing anything cool in the rehab space? You got any tricks or toys up your sleeve?
Well, BFR is a lovely thing. I'd love to play with it more. Unfortunately, with the kids, we haven't really had a point where we have had to use it too much. And as well, with the research, it's there. I love BFR. I've done it a lot myself personally, just for some personal injuries. But as well, just with the kids, yeah. Well, I think there could be other methods to explore before we kind of resort to BFR type thing. So I like to use a lot of isometric stuff. Just all right, boys, this is what a burn feels like kind of thing. Let's hold this squat at the bottom for 5 seconds type thing, particularly if they're injured. And it's almost, with the younger boys, it's about teaching them the process of, all right, we need to grind a little bit. There's going to be times where it's going to hurt. We need to, work a bit of mental resilience here through that. But one thing I do like isometrics for is, particularly with older athletes that may have the dodgy knees, the dodgy ankles, particularly dodgy knees, just before we warm up, okay, you've got 2 30-second isometric split squat holds, just to try and help them get moving a bit faster, and something they can do so they don't feel so ragged when we start, into whatever exercise you do first of the warm-up. But yeah, I think with rehab and prehab, you just got to know what you need to kind of do. I think with BFR is a great way where it's going. I think it's going to have a lot of play in the future. But again, and then I think the problem as well, having the proper tourniquets as well, knowing what kind of pressure you need to use. I think Chris Cavigo has put a lot into that, and what kind of pressures work. But I've seen a lot online of just, you just get this band where you put it around your leg and go, well, what pressure actually is that kind of thing? So it is hard to quite, okay, you might just put it around your leg and you might think that's BFR, but really it's actually a lot tighter or vice versa type thing. And then going too far the other way. So I think, I don't do too much special, I think, given the people that I work with, but I just try and you know, whatever the athlete needs. And but isometrics are, and eccentrics for that matter as well, are a pretty big tool in my toolbox.
Awesome. Yeah, for sure. Kurt, what about yourself?
I don't really use anything fancy. And I guess fortunately in the last few years, I haven't really had major injuries to deal with. I find I'm pretty lucky with that. So mainly the injuries have been quite minor. So
must be the warm-ups. Must be the warm-ups you're doing.
Now, let's just put it down to that, yeah. So I think in regards to what I've currently been doing is, like I said, motor pattern correction. And then I do like to play with the isometrics and the eccentrics a bit, like Sam said. So, but making sure it's at the right time as well. Haven't had too much in regards to, tendon injuries too much. The main ones recently have been, which I'm going to implement a little bit more a kind of contact work with the women's teams. We had a few minor AC injuries during the year. And so it's just about making sure that they're getting proper movement through their scapular thoracic joint, their AC, and have the appropriate strength through the actual shoulder girdle as well. So nothing fancy, just some basic kind of movement techniques with strength.
Yeah, sure. And fair enough too. The next thing, do we have any plans, any of us, to go out and learn more? Sam mentioned maybe he wants to do some more BFR. Is there anything in that space, in this space around the sort of prehab, rehab that we really want to go out and learn about or are interested in the next 12 months? And again, once again, we'll start with you, Nicola.
So I've actually been doing a bit of adult gymnastics over the last probably 6 months, and I'm really enjoying looking at strength at end ranges and using that for prehab and rehab, and using gymnastics as a good one to integrate to assist with that. And on top of that, learning more about your typical rowing injuries of your ribs, your back and your wrists, and really digging deep into prevention of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, adult gymnastics. It's I did about 2 years of adult gymnastics when I was maybe 26 to 28, and it was awesome for me. It gave me such an appreciation of using leverage, using like flexibility methods as well, different types of stretching. And just the old school coaches, what they would say about, say, how long do you need to hold a stretch? Like the sort of conventional sports science might be, 60 seconds or 30 seconds. They'll be like, look, if you really want to improve, it's probably going to be about 5 minutes. All those types of things, I learned so much. I can't recommend it highly enough as for strength and conditioning coaches to go and do some adult gymnastics. It's great. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the best things I've done. I've been doing strength work on my own shoulder for a long time to try and fix it up from too many years of swimming, and the best thing for it has been gymnastics. It's the first time it's starting to actually get stronger and not be sore.
That's awesome. What about yourself, Sam?
So like end range is pretty big for me. I've had a few shoulder injuries personally, just to kind of see, like, you know, like Nicola has, you know, like, what can we do? One thing that's caught my eye is Stephen Jones and the oscillatory stuff that he's doing. Just with cricketers mainly, a bit of javelin throwing as well. He's been around the world a fair bit recently with a lot of people buying in, just to kind of, you know, at the end range, at the top of that fully extended position with the shoulder, and just kind of see, you know, is that influencing tendon motion or tendon strength or things like that? And just have a look around and say, you know, what might change possibly? Because I got a few boys, you know, being a rugby league school, AC joints are a problem. You know, is there something we could possibly do there? Is it glenohumeral strength, things like that? You know, or even netball too with the overarm shoulder throws. You know, is that something we could maybe put in the prehab for a little bit to keep them a bit on the field for a bit longer, or hopefully prevent that major injury? I'm not sure, but I'd love to have a look at that and see what's going on there.
Cool, interesting. Kurt?
I've got two things, I guess. One, I've started to explore, I guess, deem abnormal movements. They're not really abnormal if you go back to the old bodybuilding days per se, but putting the torso, as I guess as an example, putting the torso under different loads of different angles for preventative back injuries. I've done a little bit in the past, and we're trying to do it a little bit more with sports, because as we know, your torso is never in that one position, and there's so many factors that influence that as well. So the other thing looking to explore a little bit with, and again, I've done this in the past with men, but with the women mainly, is bring in a little bit of tumbling, but not just tumbling. Get some of the dancers that I've worked with to incorporate their traditional floor work with the rugby program. So teaching how to roll and in different directions, and not just the classic linear tumbling. So they do a lot of floor work in multiple planes, and even just learning a few things when I worked with Expressions Dance Company, it's another world. To look and explore that.
I know there's all the sort of PNF rolling, soft rolling, hard rolling that's big in your sort of FMS, SFMA type courses and all that sort of ground-based stuff. It's really cool. And I think you've also got that sort of developmental continuum. You should be able to sort of roll before you crawl. You should be able to crawl before you walk, and you should be able to walk before you run type thing. So it's I've actually got a friend who had back pain when he was young, and he walked before he could crawl as a kid. And so the physio, he's my age, so the physio was light years ahead of his time at that time back in the early 80s, but late 80s, he told my friend to, hey, you need to go back and start crawling to fix this problem. And it helped him tremendously.
Okay, it's a wrap again, folks. Got to mention the ACA conference before I go, though. Great presenters are going to be there yet again, including these roundtable speakers. It's on the Gold Coast, no better part of Australia, 8th to 10th of November. There's a research stream, there's a tactical stream for the people working with the armed forces, police, that sort of thing. So if you're a strength and conditioning coach, a sports scientist, a physio, a student, a PE teacher, personal trainer, you're going to want to be there. I've also got to mention Val Performance. They're a great supporter of the ACA and this podcast. They're going to be at that conference I mentioned, so please go up to them. Say we appreciate you sponsoring the podcast, looking after us here. And if you're interested in any of their products, Twitter at Val Performance, website valperformance.com. So I've got to go. We're going to have more from this roundtable in our final episode, which is our next one. We're going to talk monitoring, best books, seminars, lectures. So make sure you listen in. Until next time, I'm Joseph Coyne. This is the ACA podcast.